B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bays. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Sick as a dog. The studio seems all screwed up. Why isn't the mic in the right way? Oh, all right. From the Town Fair Tire Studio, it's a Gasperless Gasper and Murray here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Yeah, no, Chris. He's off to cover the Pats game in one of the nation's great hellholes, Cincinnati. So just yours truly today, along with Tim McCone on the headlines. Got B-Rob, Brian Robb behind the glass producing the show from now until 2 o'clock. And I'm pretty positive this is the last show for 2019, as next week we're off due to the Patriots and Bills game. Pre-game will kind of preempt us. And then the following Saturday, the one after Christmas, the 28th, I know I'm going to be out of town. I don't know what the hell Chris's deal is, so I don't know. You're on your own there. Tune in then to find out who's on. So on this, what I'm deeming the final Gasper and Murray of 2019, without Chris, another reason I'm in a bad mood, rather than spending the whole show regurgitating the same crap you've heard a million times already this week on the Patriots' latest videotaping scandal, of which I'm actually taking their word. I don't feel great about the fact there hasn't been a resolution yet by the NFL, but I am taking their word on that, and we'll touch on it later. But for now, like, I mean, what else is there to say? What else is there really to say about Tom Brady and the Patriots' poor play over the last couple of weeks? Frankly, I think, at least for this year, he's cooked. So are they. Sure, they'll probably win tomorrow in Cincinnati. I think it'll be closer than you think. The Super Bowl, though, please. Get your money back if you've booked your trip to Miami. Take my word on that now. No, what I wanted to do, at least to start here, was touch on a few NFL-related stories that I felt strongly about that we were never going to touch on Felgrove Nas during the week. Specifically, one story that shows yet again how we are living in the dumbest time in history. Yesterday, the New York Giants announced that they have waived cornerback Janoris Jenkins after his inappropriate Twitter exchange with a fan, a sentence that really couldn't be more 2019 if you tried. The story, in case you don't know, goes like this. Earlier in the week, while sitting out of practice, Janoris Jenkins used the time to tweet his personal statistics, bragging that he hadn't given up a touchdown since week three. Again, couldn't be more 2019 if you tried. So that's when a member of the Giants' blah community, a fan, replied that Jenkins' play really hadn't helped the Giants avoid their current 9-game losing streak and the fact that they suck. To which Jenkins responded with, "I can only do my job, dot, dot, dot." And then he used the R word. The R word, which probably could have chosen something a little more palatable for today's taste, and a word which, as anyone with common sense knows, should get you a deserved beating or cancellation if you were to use it as a cruel slur towards someone who's disabled. Like, that I think we can all agree on, right? Right. But I think should get the response of a shrug if you use it in this context. Again, could have chosen a better word, Janoris Jenkins, but how Janoris Jenkins used it to this bleh fan, he's doing nothing more than calling this idiot fan an idiot, albeit, again, with a different term that many people deem a bit inappropriate. A shrug. That's how I looked at this. Like, this should be a non-story. But, of course, that's not what happened. What with line outrage enthusiasts always looking to collect another scalp, even though more than 5 hours later, Janoris Jenkins actually tweeted regret for the post, and he posted, "My apology for the word I used earlier. Really didn't mean no harm." And harm was in all capital letters for some reason. But either way, he apologized. That should have been enough. Should be enough. Non-story, right? Oh, nope. Wasn't enough. As you all well know by now, the apology is never, ever enough. The outrage enthusiasts, the finger waggers who are above it all, social media as a whole, they want to collect another body. So the next day, the local New York media vampires gather around Janoris Jenkins' locker, wanting more of the proverbial blood.
Give it to us. Apologize. How dare you say that word?
even though we're going to completely disregard the context you used it in. Don't you think you shouldn't live in this world when you tweet something like that? Ah, Janoris, you're the worst. Ah, you don't deserve to live. Ah, what do you have to say? Ah.
And to Janoris Jenkins' credit, he actually didn't give a fake apology he didn't mean. He simply said this.
Slang that I use back at home or with my homeboys or whatever.
Do you understand why that's not the right word to use? Or,
like I said, it's just the slang that I use with my homeboys or back at home in the hood. Is not
that doesn't really make it right, you know?
I never said it was right. I said it's a slang that I used back at home. I never said it was right. It's just something I used at home.
Will you regret saying it?
Yeah, I regret it. But at the end of the day, like I said, it's my slang. So if you take it how you going to take it, then that's on you. I don't mean to offend nobody. My dad always told me, speak freely and own up to what you say. So I always speak freely as a man, and I speak how I want
to
speak.
Is that a word you'll use, continue to use going forward?
Next question.
Yeah, thankfully he shut that last guy down. But as he said, it was a little bit tough to make it out because, you know, all the cameras and microphones being stuck in the face of Janoris Jenkins by the media vampires. Dude, how dare you use it that way? He said, look, it's slang that I used with me and my friends. Could have chosen another word. And if you took it that way, took it the wrong way, like that's on you. To me, again, applying common sense here, it's a perfectly acceptable answer. But those last two sanctimonious pukes that you hear in there, get the hell out of here. Like, don't you understand, Janoris? Don't you understand? Like, he's now given two apologies. To me, that's perfectly acceptable. But no, again, this is when now the columns went up in the New York Daily News and the New York Post and the papers down in New York. Janoris refuses to apologize. Janoris Jenkins doesn't get it. Do the right thing, Giants. Do the right thing. We want a body. And you know the script by now. We all do. And so the New York Giants follow the script. Janoris Jenkins, as of right now, 11 o'clock this morning on Saturday, a couple of days removed from this, Janoris Jenkins out of a job. The Twitter mob gets to set their sights on the next one to take out. We got another body. We got a scalp. Who's next? It's as exhausting as it is predictable. But here's the rub with this story, and this is where I kind of find it funny. What the Giants did, it's a disguise. They disguised their business decision with a social concern to appease the outrage enthusiasts. If you dig a little deeper on Janoris Jenkins, you'll find a player who's had issues with teammates, and he popped off on coaches, and he has everywhere he's been, but he specifically did that this year with the New York Giants, and he was likely going to be cut this offseason. He's on a bloated contract. His poor choice of words on Twitter, that was the easy out. Because here's the thing. Make no mistake. If Janoris Jenkins didn't have the history of being a giant pain in the ass, he'd still be there. If the Giants were winning, he'd still be there. Because the New York Giants are the same team who kept their kicker, Josh Brown, on their roster after his ex-wife said he physically abused her over 20 times. Because Josh Brown was good. Josh Brown could help them win. So it's just the hypocrisy of the thing is sickening. And I just... This is one of the things that bugs me. I had to get this off my chest. Look, Chris ain't here today, so I'm going to do what the hell I want. I had to get it off my chest because I'm just so tired of this. And it's only going to get worse, especially for someone like me who has big opinions in a business like this one. Like, we all have the proverbial sword of Damocles hanging over our head. Like, oh, and the apology's never going to be enough. And don't get it twisted. Like, he could have chosen a different word. And again, if you ever use that word towards someone with disabilities, you should catch a beating. You should be canceled. But I do believe shame, it's a valuable social tool to keep people from acting poorly. But we're losing all grasp of context. Like, it's getting worse by the day, by the minute. We're at the point in society now where you have more people that are upset by bad words than they are about heinous actions. We're now desensitized to violence. And hypersensitive about words and nonsense. Speaking of which, another thing. Michael Vick, who's been making headlines not only this week for his video, the congratulatory video that he sent out to Lamar Jackson for breaking his single-season rushing record at quarterback. No, because the NFL named Michael Vick an honorary captain for this year's Pro Bowl. Like, who even cares about that, right? But, oh boy, people care. A certain segment of people care. And, I'm up against it. So we'll get to that as to why people care. Oh, boy, they do. Michael Vick being named the honorary captain of the Pro Bowl. Like, who cares? People care. And people also care about something else as it pertains to the game on the field lately, like the talk of reseeding the playoffs. people mad about being about, you can't have a sub 500 team from the NFC East hosting a playoff game. Oh, the horror. It's not fair. That, too, that's rubbed me the wrong way. So we'll get to Michael Vick. We'll get to the talk of reseeding the NFL playoffs next. I'm sick, playing hurt, no Gasper today. So if you want to join the show at any point, 2-617-779-0985. A Gasperless Gasper and Murray here on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Gasper and Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is Gasper and Murray on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The Cowboys are 6-7. The Eagles are 6-7. One of those two teams is going to win the NFC East and host a playoff game, most likely against a Seahawks or 49ers team that will be 12-4 or 13-3. So the concept of reseeding to take away that automatic home game for a division champion whose record is inferior to a wild card team's record. The commissioner was asked on whether there's any thought being given to changing the way that playoff teams are seeded. Here's what he said.
As you know, teams go into the season, the first objective is to win the division. That's what they work on, is we win the division and get in the playoffs. And that is something that we've considered over the years. I have not heard that this year. I don't anticipate hearing it again. Again, it's been discussed in the past, but I don't see that as an issue now. If it comes up, we'll certainly have the conversation, but I don't anticipate.
The Gasperless Gasper Murray here at 98.5 of Sports. So Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, followed by NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell on the talk of reseeding the NFL playoffs, something that soon-to-be-fired Broncos head coach Vic Fangio would like to see, apparently. This week, he said he'd like to see all of the divisions eliminated and have each team play every other team in the conference once per year. And to that, and anyone that wants this, I say, tough. Yeah, in short, like, let's get rid of the divisions and rivalries, because twice a decade, and that's really, I'm probably giving it too much credit, but maybe twice a decade, a 500 team wins the division. What an ass, Vic Fangio, idiot. It's a terrible idea. It's a terrible idea, and people are mad because this year, it's going to happen for the first time since, I think it's 2013, when that sub 500 team, the Carolina Panthers, ended up hosting and beating the Arizona Cardinals. McCone, I think they might have been 11-5 that year. And typically, I feel like this always happens. Like, that sub 500 team that has the home field in the playoffs ends up winning it. The Seahawks beat.
I was going to say the Seahawks. Yeah,
the Seahawks beat the Saints, who were 11-5, and that was that famous Marshawn Lynch beast mode game where, like, they, you know, the crowd goes on the Richter scale. 08, when the Patriots were 11-5 and they get skunked and don't make the playoffs, the Matt Castle year. The Chargers, 8-8, host the Colts, beat them.
Yep.
You know, like, and I love the comedy of it. Like, that's hysterical. And, oh, but a double-digit team shouldn't have to win your division. Yay, holes. That's not my problem. So the Colts couldn't get past the Titans that year. Wah. Either the Seahawks or the Niners this year, I don't know, win one more game. That ain't my problem. The division should still matter. The division should still matter. And this year it's going to happen because, and people are already upset with the fact that the 7-9, what's going to end up being the 7-9 or 8-8 Cowboys or Eagles are going to host a playoff game. And you can't buy that kind of comedy. Now, like, I always love the sports schadenfreude, McComb. Like, I love the, like, how mad this makes people, but it maybe happens only twice a decade. And more than anything else, like, I don't know, the sports fan in me still thinks the division should matter. You should still get rewarded for winning your division, even if you're 7-9 or 6-10.
No, I'm with you 100%. The division still should matter. It happens so rarely. Like you said, when you can list kind of when this type of stuff happens, it's really not that big a deal. And also, I got to be honest, the Eagles or Cowboys are probably going to win that game.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Too, which is the best part of the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. So, again, the Seahawks or the Niners, who might end up with a 12-4 record, have to go on the road and probably lose that playoff game. Oh, I can't wait. You can't buy that kind of comedy. Like, it only happens a couple of times in a decade. So get the hell over it. And Vic Fangio, who the hell are you? Mike Vick, I wanted to just mention this, too, because this is one of the things that, like, chapped my ass this week. He's been making headlines. He gives the congratulatory video he sent to Lamar Jackson Thursday night. Watching Lamar Jackson is like watching Mike Vick in the early 2000s. So he breaks a single-season rushing record at quarterback. And the NFL named him an honorary captain for this year's Pro Bowl, to which most people shouldn't care. But, of course, a certain segment of people do. And it's a certain segment of people I usually align myself with, those that actually prefer the company of animals to people. But in the case of Michael Vick, and this is 1,000% going to get me in an argument with the wife later, you got to get the hell over it at this point. We're now, don't do math on air, 12 years removed from this story. And besides the unhinged loons on social media that still want to see Mike Vick rotting in a prison cell, apparently, or dead, you had a change.org petition over the last week or so that called for Vick to be removed as the honorary captain because of, you know, his criminal past and the dogfighting and the photos that showed. It's horrible, but... You know, the reality is, and having lived in the South for a little bit, I can tell you, and I remember Clinton Portis at the time, although it's probably not a name to bring up right now with his now yet another criminal behavior going on with him and a criminal act. But there's certain segments of the population, especially in the South, like this isn't, they don't hold dogs and animals to the on a pedestal like, you know, like people like me normally do. In dogfighting, it's no different than playing a game of craps or blackjack. It isn't. And I know that's cold and it's a tough pill for a lot of people to swallow, but that's just the reality of the situation. I think that's what it was for Vic. It doesn't make it right, but just know their perspective's way different than mine is and yours is and the people that are upset about it. But this thing gets 500,000 signatures. People want Vic, you know, taken down. They want to boycott the NFL. You know what it is. Like, and to the NFL's credit, and frankly, it's something I'd like to see more in every aspect of life. They told the complainers, they told change.org, and they told the whiners, they told them to screw. Amid the backlash, the NFL is standing behind Michael Vick as the honorary Pro Bowl captain, as they should. And even the dopey ginger hammer, Roger Goodell, he did the right thing. He said this at his press conference earlier this week.
We, over the last, 9 years or so, I've supported Michael in his recognition of the mistake that he made. He's paid a heavy price for that. He has been accountable for it. He's worked aggressively with the Humane Society and other institutions to deal with animal rights and to make sure people don't make the same mistake he made. And I admire that. I know that there are people out there who will never forgive him. He knows that. But I think this is a young man that has really taken his life in a positive direction, and we support that. So I don't anticipate any change, no.
And good. And like, what do you want? Like, what else do you people want in this case? He did 18 months in prison. He's done all the right things since. He's paid his penance. You can love dogs, like I do, and animals, and believe Michael Vick deserves not to have one massive mistake held over his head forever. You know, I love animals. Again, I prefer their company to people 99.9% of the time. But I also, one of the things I believe in is a second chance. And he's done all the right things. It's not like he paid his price, did his prison time, and then went right back to making money fighting dogs. No, he's worked with humane societies. He's put himself in front of this. But you people still want a pound of flesh. Like, I can't believe it. Then again, I kind of can, because this is the world that we live in now. It's just nonstop outrage all the time. And obviously, social media has played into this, and that's probably the worst part of it all. But I just would think at this point, you know, going on close to 15 years, many of you would be over the Michael Vick thing. But nope. No, apparently not. And to Goodell's credit, and Mike Vick's too, he knows, like, look, there's a lot of people that are never, ever, ever, ever going to accept his apology, and they just want him... I don't know what it is. Do you want him back in prison? You want to see him in the electric chair? Again, horrible thing that he did, but he paid the price, and you're still not over it. And get over it. Just like getting over the reseeding of the playoffs. Yeah, babies. All right, here's McCone with the Sports Hub headlines. Speaking of babies, let's get to a certain Patriots player who didn't like the booing last week. The deserved booing, by the way, especially at halftime for that performance. We'll get to that story coming up next year after the headlines with McCone.
You're listening to Jasper and Murray.
Fantastic chemistry.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
That was a spirited football game. Absolutely had a playoff atmosphere to it, I thought.
Too much booing for me.
Did the booing irritate?
I thought it was disrespectful, but it is what it is.
But to you guys, does that deflate?
No. I mean, can control what we can control, right? I mean... Yeah.
No, the booing bothered you. I can tell.
No. Why would booing bother me?
Because it was the first thing you mentioned.
All right, so that's Patriots linebacker Kyle Van Noy on NBC Sports Boston's Tommy Kearns Quick Slants podcast earlier this week. The Gasper List, Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So he's talking about the disrespect by you the Patriots fans at Gillette Stadium last week in the loss to the Chiefs. All right, so Kyle Van Noy, this guy's probably taken a bit too much criticism from Felger in the past. And he and his wife have, in case you don't know, they've done a ton of good off the field. In fact, this week he was named the NFLPA Community MVP. He treated 153 financially disadvantaged foster families locally to a big holiday celebration, giving them an assortment of gifts. It's a very Van Noy Christmas event that he puts on. So, like, all that's great, obviously. But this? Oh, good on Curran, too, for saying, like, no, this bothered you. Get over it, you big baby. Curran's right. You were bothered by it. And he's, again, sometimes Felger's been too harsh on him, but I think he's right when he does say Kyle Van Noy. He's like the perfect millennial Patriot. Only talk to me if it's going to be positive. The booing, and really, I think that people were booing the offense more than anything else, and rightfully so at halftime. That they were right. Like, I was there. The people were booing because of the effort the team put forth in that first half of football. It was awful. It was absolutely awful. And it's happened before. This is how quickly we forget to. Again, it's so indicative of the times we live in. Like, this has never happened before. It did. It almost happened 10 years to the day. I remember it. Another game I was also at, that horrible 09 underachieving year, that team that really couldn't get out of its own way, almost to the day. Look it up. It was a 20-10 win that they had over the Carolina Panthers. Matt Moore started that day for Carolina. And I think it was 7-7 at halftime, and people booed. People booed. It's happened before, so let's not act like it has. And so when you underperform and when people have high expectations, like we rightfully do around here, especially when it pertains to the Patriots, you get pissed off. You spent all that money. I think that might have been one of the highest ticket prices for any home game this year, that or Dallas. So people went. People were pissed. People are frustrated because the offense is seemingly getting worse by the week. And they booed. It happens. Like, enough. Like, oh, well, no, they booed us. It was disrespectful. Play better if you don't like it. That simple. Just like with the seeding thing. 12-4 on the road? Well, you should have won one more game against a division rival. You would have won. Like, get over it. And with this team right now, I think you're right. Like, I was kind of out anyway after the Houston loss, McCone. But after last week, like, obviously they're going to make the playoffs. They may even win their first playoff game. But this team going to the Super Bowl, I don't see it now. I don't know how you feel or how your perspective is on this team right now.
Look, I'm never going to count them out of going to the AFC Championship game because that's, what, 8 straight years now that they've gone. But ultimately, you look at this offense right now, and I get that they figured things out towards the end of last year, but this offense was also significantly better last year, and it wasn't very good. And this year, I just don't know how they get better, honestly. And now you got a banged up Julian Edelman, which was inevitable because feeding him the ball 15 times a game is not sustainable. And so now he's banged up this week. I mean, outside of him and James White, I don't think there's anybody reliable. Jacoby Myers, all the hype he had coming in, he sucks.
Yeah.
He is not good. And N'Keal Harry shows promise, but I mean, I don't know how you get him the ball if he can't figure out like where he's supposed to go. So he might be explosive once he has it, but I don't know how you get it to him. And Sony Michel, it's just the offense is in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
I don't see how they can overcome it.
And it starts up front, and I think collectively, we, those of us that work here, fans, anyway, like we all kind of underplayed the loss of David Andrews. I think that might be the biggest thing of all.
Yeah.
And if you go back and if you watch last year's postseason run, I remember when they get to the Super Bowl, like there's, they're circling and highlighting plays McDaniels and Bill Belichick about how David Andrews is like blocking into the second level of the Rams defense. And I think it was on the Michel touchdown. Like he's been so good and so steady up front. Like I was like, okay, well, if any team's going to overcome it, it's the Patriots because of Dante Scarnecchia and the work he's done. Like center has been a mess. The line has been a complete mess. Guys that you can typically rely on. And it's not just about like Isaiah Wynn not giving you what Trent Brown did last year in the left line. It's guys you can typically rely on, like Shaq Mason and Marcus Cannon on the right side, that have been 50% of what they were last year. Like it all starts up front. It's not sexy to talk about the offensive line, but it's the truth. Like,
no.
I think a lot of what the offense's issues are start up front.
I think it's a great point. Shaq Mason has not been the same player, and I think it might have been you tweeted out last Sunday, and I've been thinking about it all week, but has there been a worse Patriot than Marshall Newhouse in the last decade?
Oh, and my God.
I honestly don't think there has been. I mean, he is atrocious. And it honestly, it reminds me a lot of 2013 because there's been a lot of talk about Brady falling off, but to me, it's just an offense that just doesn't have weapons, and it's a lot like rolling out Aaron Dobson and Kembrell Tompkins in 2013 when there's no Gronk. And outside of Edelman, there's just not a lot there. So unfortunately, when the postseason hits, I think this defense is legit, but I just don't think they're going to be able to score enough points. Like, you need a turnover, you need a block punt, you need something to go your way, and to be able to rely on that to advance, that's a tough spot.
Yeah, in the words of Bane, it's all deception and theatricality. Like, that's the only reason they're able to get any points of getting the red zone lately. Like, it's blocked punts, it's a, you know, bad turnover, something like that.
No, it's a great point, and I know everyone says that they got screwed, and they certainly did with the rest, but you go back and look at it, and there was a lot of smoke and mirrors to even get to that point with the trick plays that they were running. I just don't think offensively they can roll up, line up, and just beat you. I don't think that's going to happen this year.
Yeah. Oh boy. And the lack of weapons. It does remind me of 2013. Again, a good record, good but not great. And I remember they went into that AFC Championship game against Denver, and I went into that game watching it at my friend's house with my arms crossed, and some of my friends be like, "Oh, you're already acting like a bitch." I'm like, "Because I already know what the outcome is. Like, this game's over." And who was the first pass to? Matthew Slater.
Yeah. You're screwed when that happens. I remember LeGarrette Blount was coming off a huge game, too, and you're like, well, maybe they can run the ball. And he got stuffed the first three times. I was like, oh, they're screwed. They got nothing.
Yeah. So I just look, if any team's going to prove me wrong, it's the Patriots. And last year, I was proven wrong. I called the season dead after the back-to-back losses to Miami and Pittsburgh right around this time last year. And then they flipped the switch, and they did it. And that was one thing they hadn't done before. It was like, you know, LeBron and the Cavs. We'll just wait till the postseason, flip the switch, and they did it, and they won the championship. So great. And that was awesome. It was a great run. But they just don't have the offensive line and the weapons. And Edelman, as you mentioned, Tim, like, is just so beat up. And he has been since day one. He has load management this week. You know, if they had won last week, what I was hoping for is that this week, like, they sit him out or Sanu out. Like, Sanu's also, that high ankle sprain is obviously an issue. Mm-hmm. What, did he get targeted once last week? But now, because they lose last week, and because the offense still hasn't made any progress and it seemed to be getting worse, like, no, it's all hands on deck tomorrow. And I say they'll win. I don't think it's going to be the blowout that people expect. I know the Bengals stink. They have one win, but since they put Dalton back in, they've been a little bit more competitive. You know, if this was Ryan Finley starting tomorrow, sure, yeah, you'll have, you know, multiple turnovers, maybe a pick six or two, and we're talking, you know, 28-7, something like that. But I think this is going to be another track to pull because of how the offense is played.
No, I think this is going to be a tough game, and honestly, next week, too, against the Bills, I know Josh Allen sucks, and he might give you a couple turnovers, but that is not going to be an easy win either.
Right. No, not at all. All right, so anything you want to join on that I've been yammering about so far in the first 45 minutes of a Gasperless Gasper Murray, have at it if you'd like. 617-779-0985. Get to the phone calls next. And also wanted to touch on something related to baseball. Baseball, the coolest of the four major sports. Never thought I would say that, but after something that happened with baseball this week, they are. We'll get to that coming up next. Gasper Murray, 98.5 of Sports Hub.
Stay tuned for more Gasper and Murray on 98.5 the Sports. This is Gasper and Murray.
You will listen.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
As more and more states make marijuana legal, Major League Baseball will change its policy to keep up. The league has removed pot from its list of drugs of abuse and replaced it with opioids. The hope is to play a role in resolving the national opioid epidemic.
I think we need to keep the opioids on the list. I'm 100% for that. Marijuana, let them have the marijuana. They need to have a little fun every once in a while.
All right. Gasperless Gasper Murray, 98.5, the Sports Hub. So I just wanted to touch on this because I thought this was another big story from the week that didn't get talked about enough. So Major League Baseball, the stodgiest and most unwilling to change league of all the four major sports, the first one through the dispensary door. I'm as stunned about this as I am happy to see it happen. Who would have guessed that the old farts of baseball would be more progressive than the NBA? I thought they would have been the first to actually do this. But as you might have just heard here, they've removed marijuana from all the lists of drugs of abuse, as MLB. And they're now going to begin testing players for opioids. The MLB Players Association League agreed on new changes to the joint drug program on Thursday. And a lot of this obviously stems from the terrible story over the summer where Angels pitcher Tyler Skaggs died. He choked on his own vomit, had a mix of alcohol and fentanyl and oxycodone in his body. And we all know how the opioid crisis is just insidious and it's growing out of control by the minute. So, you know, they rightfully, Major League Baseball and the Players Association said, okay, so if players can now use marijuana instead as a way to either cope mentally or even physically, whether it's with CBD to help them sleep, to alleviate joint pain, things of that nature, like, don't get me going on this, but it's a far more healthy option, obviously a much better option than any of these team doctors, like the Angels did, Angels doctor did, going out and getting, or Angels, the right-hand man of the doctors that worked in the medical department of the LA Angels, going out and getting, you know, Percocet on the street that were tainted, that have fentanyl in them, and Tyler Skaggs ends up dead. Like, it happens far too much. marijuana and cannabis is obviously a much better option. I would think that at this point, the other leagues would be looking into this, but, you know, the NFL is still, I think, also going to be stodgy about this. I just, good for Major League Baseball. I just can't believe of all the four major sports, they were the ones first through the door. So good on them. And they used to, look, if someone gets popped for it, they can still get fined. It's not going to be any different than alcohol is. Could lead to a player being hit with a $35,000 fine per violation, but the changes to the policy mean marijuana-related offenses will now be treated the same as alcohol-related offenses. Players who test positive now be subject to a mandatory evaluation. They have the option of receiving treatment. And teams and commissioner's office can also often, they can discipline the player in response to certain conduct. So, in other words, you know, if they're using it, if a player is using it to, again, cope or deal with pain, whatever it happens to be, and, you know, they get tested and it shows up, okay, they might get fined, but it's not going to be a suspension or anything like that. But you also can't smoke an ounce and have, you know, a big blunt party before a big game, you know, like, then you would be subject to further fines or suspension or something of that nature. But good on Major League Baseball. I still can't believe of all the sports, McCone, they were the ones that were the first to actually accept this. The old farts in baseball. Weed, that sends a bad message to the children.
I can't believe the NBA wasn't the first to jump on board. I would assume that they're going to be close behind, but you're right. For Major League Baseball to be the ones to open this door, I did not see that coming, no.
Let's go to Johnny in Texas. You're first up here on a Gasper-less Gasper. Murray this morning wants to talk about the Patriots. Hey, Johnny.
Hey, Jim, how are you today?
Good.
Tim, nice to talk to you. I'm driving to Dallas. I appreciate you. I can listen to something on my drive. And, you know, I wanted to talk about the offensive line real quick. But just before, back to the Kyle Van Noy whining about the booing. I mean, did you see postgame on Monday Night Football how Carson Wentz dealt with it with Lisa Salters on the field? They asked him, did the booing bother you in the first half? I think they were down 17-7. They got booed off the field. He goes, no. He goes, they have a right to be frustrated. We were frustrated. We went in there. We worked it out. We figured it out. I mean, that's the mindset you got to deal with when you play in a sports town like Boston, Philadelphia, New York, something like that. But to the offensive line, Jim, I remember the biggest point you were making on Felgram as all last offseason, and I was surprised that nobody was bringing it up more, is why on earth don't you franchise Trent Brown? I mean, if you're going year to year with Brady and you're worried about his Trent Brown's buy-in, if you give him a 4 or 5 year deal and you think he's a dog, franchise him. Make sure he's not a dog. You get that side of the line taken care of, and then you can move win if Shaq Mason's been as bad as people say he is. I'm not Bedard. I'm not, you know, crunching the numbers. But if Shaq Mason's not being good, maybe a plug win in at guard like he was a traditional guard at Georgia. And then quickly, finally, before I jump off, Boston College hired a new football coach. And guess what? Nobody cares. I hope the sun engulfs Chestnut Hill when it takes us all. Have a great one, guys.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Johnny. I agree there. Although, credit to Boston College, as much as I despise them and everything about them, they did a hell of a job for everything that they did in regard to Pete Frates and his passing over the past week. But yeah, them hiring a new head coach, like, who gives a rat's ass? Yes, on Trent Brown, I'm not gonna like, you know, pat myself on the back and say, like, look, I told you I was right. Like, based on things that I've heard from those that are with the team a lot and that cover the team, that are down there on a day-to-day basis, something I'm certainly never going to do because I'm lazy, they got what they got out of Trent Brown last year was a minor miracle, because his work ethic, and even you knew this anyway, coming in from San Francisco, the work ethic wasn't great. And credit to Dante Scarnecchia and the job that he did getting the job that they got out of Trent Brown last year. He was phenomenal. But my understanding is that that was an anomaly, and they were okay with seeing him go. I mean, it's not like he was problematic behind the scenes, but just lazy. In a perfect world, though, you tag him. And because he was so good, you hope for the best that you get another year like that out of him. And then you can bring Isaiah Wynn along slowly or plug him at guard, which is what he was, as the caller said, at UGA. Because he does look more like a guard than anything else by the week. And you just have him as an insurance policy to Trent Brown. Instead, this kid now with the injury issues, and last year I get it, like he blows the Achilles, nothing you can do about that. But like the turf toe, you go on IR, you sit out this week for an eye injury. Like, what was that? Would someone give you the old, you know, like the Three Stooges? Like, what, huh? Like that, I just think he's been meh at best, Isaiah Wynn, McCone. Like, I don't know. Like, I just, the offensive line has been, again, it just speaks to that being the biggest issue in the offense this year. It'd be nice if they had Brown, they franchised him, and could have brought Isaiah Wynn slowly, but It's obviously not what happened, and based on my understanding, there's reasons behind it, too, why they wouldn't have done that.
So I was actually against bringing back Trent Brown simply because, I mean, I bought into the Scarnecchia thing, right? Like, Trent Brown didn't come in with a ton of hype, and I just figured you give him whatever, and he's going to figure stuff out. And obviously, this year, that hasn't necessarily worked out the way that you thought it would. And you're right, the offensive line is a huge issue. And the booing, like the caller said, I thought was justified. I don't really know. I mean, Tom Brady was pretty close to booing those receivers off the field himself.
Right.
I mean, it was pretty pathetic with that performance. So, I don't know. Kyle Van Noy just needs to get over that one.
Yeah, and I just think, look, I hope I'm wrong. And Tim, you and I talked about it earlier this hour, like that this is going to be a tougher game than people expect. And it's like you look at it like on paper, like you scoff. Like, what? No, the one-win Bengals? That team's a complete disaster. Just history alone of the Patriots going to Cincinnati as a franchise, the Patriots have scored 10 or fewer points in 50% of their games at Cincinnati. So 7 of 13, including the last time that they played there, 2013, kind of a lot of similarities between that year and this year. They lose 13-6. And the Patriots offense and sustained drives is just in their last six games, Browns, Ravens, Eagles, Cowboys, Texans, Chiefs, they have a total of 14 scoring drives when they start in their own territory, 7 field goals, 7 touchdowns. They've averaged 2 sustained scoring drives in each of their last 6 games. That's not going to change just because they're playing the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, again, it could end up being a blowout because they're the Bengals and they could have bad turnovers, but they have been better since they put Andy Dalton back in and they bench Ryan Finley. They'll win. I just don't think it's going to be like, this is an easy layup. I don't know, man. Like, this offense, it ain't going to change just because they're going into Cincinnati against a bad Bengals team. I think it's going to be a tougher game than people expect. I wouldn't even be shocked if they don't even get the 20 points tomorrow. Again, they'll win. I'm not predicting they lose. But I am predicting it being a tougher game than a lot of people expect. We'll pause the Patriots in football and all my bitching conversation for now. We do have to get to the Sports Hub Celtics show. We can certainly bitch about them as they've now lost 2 in a row and are now 0-2 to the Philadelphia 76ers. Boy, did Joel Embiid bend you over the other night? That was, you're going to get that kind of play out of him? The East could be a little bit more problematic than I think we would have all expected. So we're going to spend the next hour in the Boston Celtics. If you want to join the show, 617-779-0985. We have Brian Robb alongside as well, he who covers the Celtics for Boston Sports Journal. McCone, obviously a big hoop head as well, so we'll get to all that coming up next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.